WindowEyes Professional from GW Micro is almost here, and with it will come access to Windows XP, both home and professional. Mike Lawler of GW Micro is here to tell us about WindowEyes Professional, but also to give us some views on Windows XP and what it all means. Mike, welcome to Main Menu. It's the first time that we've had the pleasure of speaking to you. Let me ask you first of all for some overall impressions as a blind person who's been using Windows XP. Is it worth the bother or not?
Well, I don't think I don't think blindness matters, to tell you the truth. At least with WindowEyes, I mean, it's going to work just like it does a 9X. It's going to feel like it does a 9X. So I think the real question is it worth the bother to you as an individual, you know, regardless of whether you're blind or not? I don't think blindness comes into the equation with our product.
And what's your view on that as somebody who has been using XP and you're obviously experienced with the other operating systems? Are there significant advantages in being an XP user?
It's certainly nice not to run out of user resources, or what they call system resources. Really, there aren't system resources in 9X. There's really GDI and user resources. System resources is actually the lesser of the two, which ends up usually being user resources. And if you run apps, close apps, eventually you're going to reboot. I mean, you're just going to reboot. It's going to happen. With XP, that's not going to happen. You run apps, close apps. An app crashes. The system just keeps going. And that's a big deal to me. I think that the multi-user support in XP is another nice thing because my family, my wife, has her own login. She's able to finally customize her visuals and customize everything just how she wants it. And it's not half-baked like it was in 9X. I mean, the users truly are separate. There's a common desktop and a common start menu and so forth, but you can move items to your own local desktop and your local start menu, and then you've got them and the other people don't have to have them. They don't have to be bothered with them. And my children, I've got them set up so they can't do anything. I've got a 2-year-old and a 2-month-old, which obviously my 2-month-old doesn't do anything, but the 2-year-old, he can't accidentally delete items off the desktop or change any of my settings. So I think that multi-user support is very attractive to me. I really like it.
I've been reading quite a few of the reviews, and somebody in the New York Times made the comment that he thought home users were going to be a bit perturbed by the fact that even if you're just a single user using a PC, you're going to have to log in all the time. But I guess it's not much of a big deal, really.
Well, if you don't set a password, you don't have to log in. And, of course, if you use Tweak UI, you can set it up to auto-log in.
So there is a Tweak UI that works with Windows XP?
Yeah, there is a set of power toys on Microsoft's site. They just shipped them yesterday that works with XP.
Okay. People are very concerned in the blind community about their DOS programs that they've used for ages, and particularly programs that may be required in the area of device drivers to make their external speech synthesizers work or whatever. What sort of issues do we encounter with that?
Yeah, with 2000 and XP, any DOS-based device drivers that have to load and config sysautoexec, they're just simply not going to happen. They're not going to exist. They're not going to be there. And that's frustrating, but it's one of those deals where we're never going to be able to grow beyond the limits of 9X if we don't just accept that and say that that's terrible, but that's life. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know of any way around that. I guess it's easy for me to say that personally because I'm using a speak out and I don't have a problem. But at some point you have to say, it's just like when we all went to Windows to get around the 640K boundary. At some point you have to get. I mean, that's just how life works. I don't know of a gentle way to put that.
Okay.
And then as far as other DOS programs, we do plan to have support for the command prompts. There's a big misnomer out there that there's no command prompt in XP. There is. It's not a DOS prompt. It's a command prompt. There's a big difference. It's not DOS. It might look like DOS. You might be able to do DIR enter and get a directory listing, but it is not DOS. It's a command prompt. You can run a lot of DOS applications under it, but some you can. I don't have a list, obviously. I've never found one that doesn't work because I don't use that many anymore. But another thing that people can do if they don't want to have to deal with a command prompt, I'm using a product called Take Command from JP Software, the 4DOS people, and I'm able to redirect the output of like ping and traceroute and all these command line console applications to the caveman or the take command window through a technology they call caveman. And then my input, what I type, goes back to that window. And so I'm able to use that now, even though our command prompt support is still under development. But I don't care, because I found a solution that gets me around it right now, today.
I understand there's also a properties box that you can bring up for every application in Windows XP that deals with compatibility issues.
Yeah, and it has to do with, you know, say an application will only work in 256 colors, or will only work in 640 by 480, or it requires some esoteric thing like the way Windows 95 did memory or heat management, as they call it, memory management essentially. XP will emulate that. Obviously, I'm assuming that's going to get slower. I don't know. Again, I don't have any applications that require compatibility, so I don't really know the extent of what it's going to offer. But I do know that I see that when Microsoft released XP yesterday, they added some 40 more applications to their database of compatibility. And essentially, that's what they do. Every 3 months or so, they release a compatibility update, and it updates a database with applications and settings that will make them work.
Product activation is something that's been pretty controversial, and it's been talked about a lot. What is your experience with product activation? Has it caused you any grief?
No, I haven't had any problems with it. And I think it's one of those deals where Microsoft is simply enforcing their software license. A lot of people probably don't realize the software license says, right there in black and white, that you can only install a copy of Windows on a single machine. That's their software license. Now, we may not like it as individuals, but it doesn't really give us the right to violate it. It'd just be like if I walked into a store and said, I don't like the fact that that DVD player is $199. I think I'll just pick her up and walk out. And so I think that, you know, if we're not going to to obey our laws and our legal system, then eventually it goes into anarchy. And if you say, well, it's okay to break the law and install this version of Windows on two or three machines, where does it end? I mean, how far do you push it? How far do you say it's okay to break the law because I don't agree with it? So I want to say right now on the record that I don't agree with that license. I think it should be more like our license, where you can install it on as many machines as you want to, as long as you're the user. Or maybe even if your family's the user, there should be a certain amount of lenience. Otherwise, they come off looking like big bully corporate America, and you know, we don't care about home users and so on and so forth. I think that will eventually play out in the court of public opinion. But I'm not worried about product activation. Essentially, it's not as invasive as it used to be. From what I've read, it's going to let you change up to 6 hardware components, and after every 4 months, it will forget all about your hardware install, and you have a clean slate. So I think the upgraders and the tweakers and the people who are going to be changing out hardware, I don't really think they're going to be affected by it. And so I think that it's received a lot of negative press. I think because people don't like change. They want the status quo to keep rolling on. And that's, you know, even with NT, with the 2000/XP code base, which, of course, is based on NT, we have to give up DOS. We have to give up booting to DOS. We have to give up a lot of things. And people aren't comfortable with that. They're not comfortable with change. They're not comfortable with, having to change the way they do things. But if we can't at least have a little bit of tolerance for change, at some point we reach a brick wall. We reach the end of what we're currently using has the ability to give us. And so we have to be able to accept that change and say, I'm going to at least be open-minded enough to give it a shot. Not just say, oh, I read an article in a magazine, and I'm going to make my decision solely based on that. You can't make your decision just based on reading reviews. You got to get in there and play with things, try things. I mean, that's like saying, well, I've talked to 10 people about the different screen readers, and I'm going to make my decision based on what they said instead of getting the demos and trying them for myself. So you got to get in there and try stuff, and we've got to not be afraid to try new things. And Microsoft, if product activation becomes a big hassle, or they find that they're not really gaining any more sales to offset the amount of money that it's costing them to run their activation phone lines and their activation databases and so forth, they're a business. They'll respond to that. Or if public opinion gets super aggressive about it, they'll respond to that. And so, but I think we all have to keep rational and not just say, well, it's different, so I don't like it.
Presumably, the hardware that it's looking at is pretty low-level hardware. For example, if you plug in hardware into a serial port or a USB port, it's not going to worry about that.
No, it doesn't care about that.
Yeah.
It's all internal. From what I've read, it's the CPU, the motherboard, the some part of the hard drive, the volume serial number of your hard drive, your MAC address on your Ethernet card, your video card, some part of your CD-ROM and your sound card, I think. I'm not going to say that I'm right on that, because I could be wrong. I could be missing something, there could be something in there that I'm wrong about. But essentially, it's low-level stuff.
People have been concerned, firstly, that the product activation is sending some information about oneself back to Microsoft, but also that there are many other ways in which Microsoft is trying to gather information about you, the user, including nagging you relentlessly to get a passport. Have you found that to be an issue?
Well, it will ask you for a passport, I think, up to 5 times. I don't know, honestly, because I had a passport, so I just entered it, and it just never asked me again. But, you know, my passport doesn't give any information. It's just my email address. That's it. I mean, any Windows or MSN or Windows Messenger user who's signed up and got a passport, not a Hotmail account, but actually use an existing email address, there's not that much information associated with that. I mean, maybe my name and my email address. I don't really remember, but I certainly know when I filled out my passport for MSN Messenger, when I first started using it, I wasn't concerned about privacy, and I'm able to use that existing passport for XP. So if it was good enough for me for Messenger, and I know there are a lot of people in the blindness community using it, then why isn't it good enough for XP?
Yeah, it's interesting to me that a lot of people don't understand that you can use MSN Messenger without getting a Hotmail account.
Exactly. I mean, that's very surprising. And that's kind of Microsoft's fault. They kind of put it down there at the bottom. They don't make it real obvious that you don't have to get a Hotmail account. But on the other hand, I think we have to look at Microsoft is a business. It needs to promote itself. Maybe it promotes itself too aggressively. I certainly think that there's a lot of proof of that. But Microsoft is not, I don't think they're doing much of anything that most other businesses wouldn't do in their position. So again, I think we have to look at what are they doing and rationalize it and not just jump on the hot-headed, I'm just not going to deal with this because someone said it's bad approach.
You have a choice of two browsers in Windows XP. You have MSN Explorer and Internet Explorer. We know that GW Micro has bent over backwards to provide excellent Internet Explorer support. How does MSN Explorer pan out with Window Eyes?
I actually haven't used it yet because I've been focusing on other things. I know that at least under 9X, we've worked pretty aggressively with the MSN Explorer team. And for the most part, Window Eyes works pretty well with the MSN Explorer 6, whatever release that was. I haven't really looked at the one that's in XP, but we've got testers in Microsoft that are testing it. They haven't come to us with any big issues, and I'm not surprised, because really MSN Explorer is just a front end for IE. In the end, it's all back down to IE, Media Player, Messenger, all the other Microsoft components that we're already using, just with an interface on top of them.
One of the things that really impressed me about MSN Explorer is that it's detected the screen reader present flag, and it actually came up with a custom-designed tour for people who needed access to keyboard shortcuts and took you through those, which was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I've heard about that, and I think that... I don't want to get too far off the subject of XP, but I think that underscores, and I read on the lists a lot, you know, people are very suspicious. They're very almost pessimistic, negative toward Microsoft, and I guess I don't think that's justified anymore. I think that they've got a lot of people out there working hard to try to make things more accessible. Is everything great? Is everything perfectly accessible? No. Will everything ever be perfectly accessible? I doubt it. I mean, try using a DVD player. Try using a VCR. And we don't scream about that. I mean, we don't get on the internet and scream that we can't program our VCRs or we can't use our DVD players. But if there's a small problem with a computer program, we scream about that. Microsoft's terrible and no one cares about us. And I think we have to take a different approach as a community. I really do. I think we have to be a lot more balanced and a lot less trigger happy to just react immediately. I think that there's clear evidence that Microsoft really is trying to make things more accessible. They are working very closely with us, taking input from us, you know, fixing things that we ask them to fix, maybe not as timely as we want them to, but, you know, let's be fair. It's a huge tens and tens of thousands of people organization. They don't move as fast as we do. But they really do want to do the right thing, and I think that we've got to encourage that. You know, let them know when they're doing wrong, but just let them know that they're doing wrong in that area and not just say, oh, you've done wrong in this one area, so that undoes everything else that you've done right. I think we're far too quick to do that as a community. And that's my opinion. I'm not certain that that's reflective of GW Micro's opinion, but that's how I see it as a blind person, and I hope people can differentiate that.
Sure. In my mind, the turning point was the dreadful experience that we all had with Internet Explorer 4, and I think Microsoft really learned a lot of valuable lessons, and at that point I think the tide really did start to turn.
Yeah, I think it did too. At least they think about accessibility. They don't always get it right. There are certainly aspects there, you know, for Encarta is a great example, where accessibility hasn't made its way there. But again, I think we all have to be realistic. We are a minority. Everything isn't going to, you know, work perfect for us, especially not all the time and not right out of the box. And like I said, my argument back to accessibility is, why is it that we're so critical of every aspect of our computer software, and yet we don't mind that we can't use most of the features on our current consumer electronics? We can't use even if we can play DVDs, we certainly can't use the menus on them. We can't go to the special features. We can't watch the behind-the-scenes stuff and the trailers and on and on and on. And I have not read one thing on any list about that. So I think we've got to be a lot more balanced and just realize that in the grand scheme of things, we've got pretty good access to computers. It needs to get better, but we at least need to recognize and be appreciative of what we've accomplished so far.
Just one thing I didn't ask you when we were talking about instant messaging was that there's an application in XP called Windows Messenger. Is that significantly different from the new MSN Messenger that's out there?
No, it's very similar to it. As you know, the UI's changed a little bit in MSN Messenger. You've got some extra buttons when you tab around and stuff, but it's all accessible. It's all the same. Window Eye still lets you know when someone logs in, lets you know when it wants attention, and so on and so forth. All that works.
I've got to say, the Window Eye support for MSN Messenger, because of those features with blinking icons and the system tray, etc., is just outstanding. Works really well.
Yeah, and I think that comes from the fact that I'm so involved with our development, and I am blind. I am a user. I'm going to use it on a daily basis, and I put stuff like that in there. I'm constantly thinking of, you know, what can we do to give access to the details. We pay attention to the details in general with Window Eyes, and that's one of the reasons that things take us longer, but details are important. You can't just slap something out on the market that has is a good piece of cake but has no icing. You just can't do that. You've got to pay attention to those details and pay attention to all the little things and the subtleties to really create a solid experience for the user.
Before we come on to the really good Window Eyes-y questions, I just wanted to check with you about the CD burning capability, and I don't know whether you've played with that, but it looks as if programs like Easy CD Creator and things may be almost redundant if you have Windows XP.
Yeah, I was just talking to one of our users about that today. I actually haven't purchased my, I don't have a burner here at work, and I haven't purchased my burner at home because I'm still trying to fight my 2-year-old on sticking two CDs at once in my head. I've got an old 6-spin CD-ROM that, you know, I don't use it that much, so I'm like, why upgrade it? I just don't care. But I was getting ready to purchase a new burner. I just did a lot of research on them, and I was getting ready to purchase one. But he's still playing with the CD-ROM, and I don't want to ruin my brand new burner, so I haven't got one yet. But I was talking to one of our testers, and he said that he's looked at it some, and it looks like it's going to be really slick, but he hasn't worked with it extensively. So I can't honestly tell you for sure. I wish I had that answer by now, but
yeah.
I don't want to destroy the CDRW in the process.
Yeah, you might be waiting a long time, especially if you've got a 2-month-old as well. I've got kids who are 5, 3, and 1, and they're forever pulling knobs off the stereo and putting two things in things. I understand that it's actually quite integrated with Windows Explorer in terms of being able to just copy and paste onto your CD burner, which could be really nice.
Yeah, I think especially for, I mean, obviously for just CDRs, I don't know, I think it's RWs where it's going to be really nice, but fortunately they're not that expensive, the media, so.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, that's how it should be. That's not Microsoft doing something, in my opinion, that's not Microsoft doing something it shouldn't do. That's something the OS should do. I mean, I think that we look at OSs, and again, I'm digressing slightly, but I think we look at an OS and we look at features and we say, oh, bad old Microsoft's including Internet Explorer with Windows. Well, how's that any difference including WordPad? You know, it's an HTML viewer is really what it is in the end of it. And you know, if we load up Linux, it's going to have Lynx, it's going to have Pine, all that's going to be right there, part of the operating system, part of the distro, as they call it. And I think that it's good that Microsoft includes that. People want to be able to just use Windows Explorer and treat that device just like any other drive. You shouldn't have to go through a bunch of special hoops. So I think that's a move in the right direction if it works as advertised.
And I understand there is Windows Media Player 8 in Windows XP. Have you had much of a chance to listen to some music and find out what MP3 support is like?
I haven't listened to a lot, but MP3 support as far as playing MP3s is going to be fine. It's going to be just as good as it's always been in any other recent edition of Media Player. Where it draws back is on the ability to create the MP3s. But they've got add-on packs by third parties that people can buy for $10, $20 that will let them create MP3s. And I think that's just fine. I think if they don't want to provide that in the operating system, that's their discretion, because they probably have to pay a licensing fee.
Yes,
to
they
be
do.
Able to
yep.
provide that.
Mm. Now, this is a bit of an audio techie question, and I don't really expect you to be able to answer this, but the Windows Media Tools, the legacy ones that have worked in previous versions of Windows, do have a version of the Fraunhofer encoder in them that installs itself into the audio compression manager. I'd be quite curious to find out from someone whether those tools will run on Windows XP and whether there is a way of getting the MP3 codec back into the audio compression manager.
Yeah, that I don't know. I have heard that Microsoft licensed that again for XP, but I don't know if they licensed the full-blown thing or just a limited version of it.
Okay. Now, let's talk some Window Eye specifics. If you install XP out of the box, do you have to make a series of changes to XP's interface to work best with Window Eye?
Currently, we don't anticipate that you're going to have to make any changes. You will be able to use the new XP interface, or you'll be able to go back to the classic interface, and it'll pretty much be up to you as to which one you want to use. Now, if you change color schemes, of course, beyond the ones that we label, then you'd have to relabel some graphics. But I don't know that problem's ever going to get solved unless there's a standard like MSAA for manufacturers to provide graphic labels to us.
In terms of visual aspects, they are quite different looking, I understand, the classic interface versus the new one. But do they have differences in terms of the way that a blind user interacts with them?
Yeah, there's definitely differences. The start menu is organized a lot different if you have the new interface. I actually haven't used the new interface a whole lot, to tell you the truth, but it's definitely different. I would say that it'll probably be about as different for a blind user as it will be for a sighted user. I mean, it's going to be different for a sighted user walking up to the machine as well, and the user's just going to have to arrow through the menu and do some exploring to get a feel for just how it works.
But it's a fairly simple process to make things the way that we're used to.
Sure, there are three settings that you can change. Two of them are in the, all three of them are in the control panel, different areas of the control panel. The taskbar and start menu settings, the folder settings, and the display settings. There are changes that you can make in there to very quickly get back to the classic view if you want to.
And are there any...
And you don't have to change them all. You can change one, or you can change two, or you can change three.
Okay.
They're all independent, and Window Eye won't care.
So that's quite a significant step forward, really, because you used to have to follow Section 1.9 or whatever it was of the Window Eye's manual quite in detail in order to really get the best value out of Window Eye.
Right, it is a big step forward. Mm. We're going to be able to support that, and there are some visual effects Like in 9X, you had to turn off the animation effects. Microsoft has actually provided a call for us to do that for you. So on the fly, when WindowEyes launches, it can turn those effects off. When WindowEyes closes, it turns them back to whatever they were before it launched. So it can go into the system, make it work while it's running, but then when WindowEyes closes, they go back to whatever they were, which I think is kind of nice. It's all transparent.
Yeah, especially if you are sharing the same logon with a sighted user.
Exactly.
Yeah. What's the differences then between the home version and the corporate version of Windows XP?
We actually researched that. There's a very long list of differences, but the short version is that the professional version will support multiple processors, which might be nice in the future. I haven't tried it, so I don't know what a machine would feel like with a screen reader running. With two processors to supply it with more processing. There are some security differences, and I don't know all the details on that. And there are some more services provided, some fax services and some other things that are provided in the professional version. Professional just adds; it doesn't take away. It's not like home has something and professional doesn't include that. But I don't have all the details. I would say anyone who really wants to go to that or to find out what the differences are, there's certainly some write-ups on Microsoft's site, and then there's some write-ups on the Windows 2000 magazine site. And I don't have that URL handy, but we can certainly get it to someone.
Right. There's a bit of a misconception out there that the Windows XP Home is not for people running networks and things like that, but that's not the case, right?
Networking capability. It does most of what the professional version does. I think the professional version has some low-level diagnostic capabilities or there's something. There's something to do with TCP/IP that the professional version supports and the home version doesn't, but I don't think it's something that the average user would care about. I don't remember what it is. But when I read about it, it didn't strike me as that big of a deal. I have to say part of it, too, is that I opted for the professional version because the ability to have the possibility of multiple processors in the future was exciting enough for me that I honestly, from a personal standpoint of view, as soon as I found that out, it just didn't matter. At that point, professional was the way to go. And people can find professional pretty reasonably priced on the Internet. You go to pricewatch.com, and it's not super expensive. So I think anyone who thinks that they might want to run a system with multiple processors, that should be their stopping point. They should just go for professional and be done with it.
Now, here's the question. When will WindowEyes users be treated to a version of WindowEyes that works with XP?
Our current timeline is sometime in December. That's what we settled on, and that's what we were saying last week at the GAP. And our private beta is going really well. People are finding some problems here and there, but they're not big problems that I think are showstoppers. They're application specific, or they're problems that won't be that difficult for us to resolve. Right now, the biggest issue that we're working on are problems with Eloquence. Eloquence itself, version 5, has problems in 2000/XP, and so we're trying to come up with either getting them to solve the problems. And if they won't solve the problems or can't do it in a timely fashion, then we'll have to look at other options. But it's not stable at all under 2000 or XP, and we're working with them on that right now to try to get somewhere with it. One of the other big things that we need to do before we can get a public beta out is finish up the install so that it can be a talking install so that a blind user can use that, and we don't have that completed. So it's polishing things, but it's things that there's been a big discussion raging on our, which you've probably seen on our GW Info list, about just get the public beta out there. People will just know what's beta, and they'll just say that, you know, whatever the problems are, they'll be open-minded and not think that that's reflective of the final product. And this doesn't work that way. Those people are just not realistic. It might work that way for them, but for the vast majority of people, if they fired up WindowEyes right now today and they brought up the start menu and it didn't say start menu, which it currently doesn't in XP, they would think to themselves, well, this is awful. It doesn't tell me I'm in the start menu. But from our perspective internally, the reason that that's not fixed is because we know why it's broke. We know how to fix it, but we've been fixing other things that we thought were bigger, that were more important, that needed more testing, and so we fixed them first. And so from my perspective, I could care less if it says Start Menu. I know when I hit that Windows key, I'm in the Start Menu. And if it doesn't tell me Start Menu, that's just a nice speech thing that I can live without. But if we put out a public beta with something like that, we would literally be inundated with people saying, this is awful. This is a big problem. And that's, you know, so we've got to look at our public betas and say, we've got to make sure that when we put one out, it's not going to cause us so much work that we can't get the final product out because people are complaining about things that in the grand scheme of things, from our development perspective, are not significant. They're not significant to resolve. Not that they're not significant issues, but they're not significant to resolve.
Is the fact that Microsoft has released SAPI 5 causing you any grief? Is SAPI 5 what Windows XP comes with?
It does come with that by default, but you can install 4 and they coexist with no problem.
Oh, do they? Okay. Yeah, because version 5 is incompatible with version 4. I mean,
right, they're different, but they coexist.
Oh,
it's
very
not like
good.
With 3 and 4 where they couldn't coexist. 4 and 5 coexist just fine.
Well, that's a step forward again. The WindowEyes plan in terms of pricing and how you're going to release this product is really quite interesting. And for those who haven't caught up with it, are you able to talk us through what the story is, what people have to buy in order to have access to Windows XP?
Yeah, once the product's shipping, they'll have to buy the WindowEyes Professional version, which will be, and then of course none of these prices include shipping, and they're all in U.S. But it'll be $7.95. That'll get them support for all operating systems, XP, Home, Professional, 2000, all the 9X and MEs, and so forth. If someone currently owns version 4.1.1 of our product, which is the current version, then they'll be able to upgrade to Professional for the first 60 days. After it's released, from the date of its release, for 60 days, for $200. So basically the difference. The logic on that being that they didn't have the opportunity to purchase Professional. You know, they're already existing customer. Professional didn't exist, so we'll let them upgrade for the difference. After that 60 days, it goes up to $250 because they do have the ability to purchase it right up front. And so we want to reward the people who are purchasing it right up front, give them, you know, their price and so on and so forth. The nice thing that I think we're doing is that if someone has an SMA, they can use two of their SMA accounts, and right now the SMA is $249 through the end of this month, and a lot of people bought the SMA for $199, so they can use two of their SMA accounts for Professional. And then get the next major upgrade for their third SMA account. And I think that especially for the people who bought it for $199, they clearly won. I mean, we're clearly giving them something for that SMA. We're not just taking their money, having the use of it, and not giving them something in return. And even the people who buy it for $249, the chances of the next major upgrade being $50 are small.
So
they're still going to win.
GW Micro then will have two separate screen readers, right?
Yeah, WindowEyes Standard and WindowEyes Professional.
Now, are there issues in terms of keeping both feature sets current? Are we eventually going to find the 9X product falling behind in terms of core screen reading features?
No, it's the same code base. It's just a matter of if we compile it for 9X or if we compile it for 2000 and XP. There are things that we will do in 2000 and XP that we won't do in 9X. For example, we're working on the ability for multi-user support for WindowEyes so that, you know, you can have it on a network and have multiple users share it and have their own separate settings. With 9X, it's just going to be there, and everyone's going to be able to adjust it and change it. With 2000 and XP, we'll restrict it to administrators because that's part of the security model of the operating system. So it'll be really nice for someone in a college for a network install. They can set up the users, and then from then on, it's restricted, and the only person who can change all users is administrator. But you as a user can only change your own settings. And that fits right in within the way XP and 2000 work themselves. As a user, you can only change your own settings, change your own documents, and so on and so forth. And so that's a difference, but it's not... it's not because, you know, we're actively trying to rob the 9X product. It's simply that the OS doesn't have a feature.
So if you're thinking of going to XP anytime, it would probably make sense if you're a WindowWise user to purchase that $200 upgrade within the first 60 days, because you've still got the 9X product on that CD.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you have any inkling that you're going to go to 2000 or to XP, it would definitely make sense to purchase it within the first 60 days, or like I said, to purchase an SMA,
right?
Because you're banking on the fact that is that next major upgrade going to be more than $49, and you have to include shipping in there as well. You get that SMA, shipping doesn't count. So, you know, by the time you ship two upgrades, there's another $14-$15. So you have to say to yourself, is that next upgrade going to be, going to be more than $49? And I can almost guarantee you the next major upgrade will be.
Can we talk a bit about how GW Micro determines priorities for new features? In particular, there's been a bit of expression of concern about WindowWise's work with some of the Office products and the degree to which it is, for example, reading tables and doing things like that. What, for example, causes GW Micro to prioritize very good internet access over use with Microsoft Word and in tables, for instance?
Boy, that's a complex question. One of the reasons that we have tables in the internet is because it was a simple extension of what we developed. When we developed the MSAA abilities that when we did that back in 3.0, I mean, we're talking, what, when did 3.0 come out? I used to have all this stuff in the heart, but since I got kids, I don't have the memory that I used to. But we're talking years.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking years, you know, maybe 1998 or whatever. Back then, I don't think that any screen reader had that ability, really, like the way we did when we debuted it. There were some other screen readers that had some abilities, but I clearly don't think that they were at the level that we were at. And the abilities that screen readers currently have today in Microsoft Office, I don't think really existed back then either. If they did, they were in their infancy. So essentially what we've chosen to do with the table support in IE is just extend something that we already had developed. As far as Office, and some of the things that we don't have with the Office suite, we really kind of go by how many users ask us for different features. And you can use WindowWise with Word today. If you need to get, you're in college and you need to create a term paper, it's going to work great. If you need to do some stuff with tables, I understand from a lot of people that they can use Brian Hartchin's set files and use it. It's not optimal, but it's usable. And so, but we received a tremendous amount of requests from people to give them access to the internet, which really is, they're basically saying, give me access to the world, give me access to information. And so that's what we want to be able to provide. So we try to go by what do most users ask for, what do most users need. And if something works but isn't optimal, but at least it works and we can explain how it works, maybe that's okay until we can make something else optimal. And then once we get that done, then we can go back to the other thing and make it optimal. So we try to, again, we try, when we say that WindowWise does something, it really, and I think that you know this using the product, it really does it. It's not always the case, but 99% of the time, unless there's a bug that we all missed, I think that we're very good at trying to find bugs, especially with our lengthy public beta cycles and so forth. We do our best to find them. Does 411 have bugs? Sure. Is Professional going to have bugs when it comes out? Sure. We're not going to find them all, and you as the users aren't going to find them all either. We're all in this together. We're all trying to find these problems together and fix them. But we try to address, address things that users say that they really need addressed. And so I think that, and we try to do it right and do it well, not just patchwork it together and say, geez, this is great for a sales demo. Sure looks good, and we can sell thousands of copies to people based on this sales demo, but then when you really get under the hood and start using it, it all falls apart. It's very fragile. It's put together, with popsicle sticks. WindowWise isn't like that. I mean, when we say something works and we say we've got a capability and a feature, it really does work across the board.
So what will the next version be called? Are you going to synchronize the version numbers between the 9X and the Pro product?
Yeah, they're going to be the same version number, and I'm not certain that version number has been fully finalized.
Right,
but
okay.
It's probably going to be 4.2,
yep.
Something like 4.2, but that's a guess.
Okay.
But I don't think that, certainly probably not going to be 5.0, because The core product is not going to be that changed from 4.1.1. So it doesn't warrant a major version number increase because we're just adding the professional support and thus the professional moniker.
Okay, you must have spent a lot of time in actually developing the code and tweaking it and things for professional. Does that mean that when that fundamental development work is off your plate, do you expect additions to the feature set to become more rapid?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, because we won't be putting so much low-level time into getting the low-level stuff working. We'll be able to create a feature, just like Braille support, and I think that, the table support in IE, I mean, all the other features that have been added. We started developing professional a couple years ago, 3 years ago, somewhere there. I don't know. It's been a long time. When we started developing it, 2000 was still a gleam in everybody's eye, and we were first looking at NT4. So we've been working on the technology for a long time, and one of the reasons that we took such a long time is to make sure that we could be video card independent and professional, just like we are in 9X. That's very important to us. But yeah, we put a lot of time into that low-level capability, but as you'll find, when you get it, professional is going to have all the features 9X has. It's going to have Braille, it's going to have tables in IE, it's going to have the MFAA support that IE has, it's going to have the Acrobat support, on and on and on. And so once we're, now that we're really done with this low-level stuff, and we're just kind of tweaking things now so that we can get the product released, once that sucker ships, then we're going to be able to put all of our resources into strictly into features until Microsoft comes up with another operating system that we have to look at.
Oh, goodness. All right. So let's just summarize before we conclude. If somebody is sitting there running 98-second edition or Millennium, what should be the factors that they consider when they're thinking, should I upgrade to XP or just stay as I am?
I think they need to look at what they're using the computer for. Are they happy with it? Is it doing what they want it to do? Obviously, some people are going to upgrade because they want the latest and greatest. They want to be on the bleeding edge. And it does, I mean, that's just their overriding concern. But for most people, and I think, again, this just in general, not as a blindness thing, but just in general, is my current computer doing what I want it to do? Yes, it is. I'm very happy with it. I'm not frustrated with it. I'm not, you know, really psyched about trying something new. I'll stick with what I've got. No, it's not. I reboot all the time. I'm sick of running out of resources. I'm sick of the instabilities in this, or I'm sick of the limitations of not, you know, of multiple users or so on and so forth. Then I think they should strongly consider going to XP. And I think most of our users should go straight to XP and bypass 2000. I just don't see any gain in going to 2000. Just a quick example, 2000 security settings are very rigorous. If you want to share a hard drive, and you probably got your own local LAN, so you want to know what I'm talking about. You want to share a hard drive on your network. With 2000, you got to make sure that every machine that accesses that hard drive, the person logged into that machine has an account on your 2000 machine. With XP, you can also do that, or you can say something like use simple file sharing, in which case it'll work just like 9X does. And that's just one example of the work that Microsoft put into making this truly a convergence OS. They realize that home users and a lot of small businesses, they don't need all that extra fancy security. So they can just say, okay, just get rid of all the security and share the drive blindly to anyone who on my network who wants it. Something else that people should look at when they're upgrading to XP is the compatibility advisor, which you can get from Microsoft's website, or it actually comes on the XP CD. You can run that before you ever run setup. When you stick that CD in, one of the options is run the compatibility advisor, and it'll give you a report that says this hardware is going to need new drivers. You should uninstall this software before you upgrade and then reinstall it when you're done. Norton Utilities is a real good example of that. And the compatibility advisor I thought was really good. I actually did the upgrade from Millennium on my home system. And Microsoft claims that when you install XP, it wipes out your old operating system and installs XP. It's not like when you upgrade from 95 to 98 to Millennium and it just overlays it. And they're not kidding. It really does. For example, XP doesn't use VXD files. You won't find one in your Windows or Windows System 32 directory. in XP. So it's a real good upgrade. But back to your question, I think that you have to evaluate what you're using the computer for, what you want to get out of the computer in the future, and then decide, you know, is it worth going to XP? And I don't think the screen reader really needs to be a factor other than the fact that you're going to have to spend money to upgrade the screen reader, which is no different than having to spend money to upgrade the operating system. And that's a good point. A lot of people call us and they're just blown away that they have to upgrade their screen reader. They just can't believe they've got to spend money to give us money to upgrade the screen reader, but yet they're willing to upgrade the operating system, which costs them money. That blows my mind. People have got to support access vendors if they want access vendors to continue providing things for them. It just doesn't all come free.
Yeah, and this is no 98 to Millennium upgrade. This is a whole new operating system, like a completely new kernel, new architecture.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just let me go back to this compatibility wizard. So you can go to the Microsoft website and download something that you can run on your existing machine today for free, and it will tell you whether you've gotten the issues with upgrading to XP.
Yes.
Cool.
No, and I don't know if it's perfect. I'm sure there's probably some program out there they didn't account for. But it did a very good job for me when I upgraded my machine.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate your candor and giving up your time to have a chat to us. And we will obviously be announcing when WindowEyes Professional is available so we can all get stuck into XP.
Good. And I would say any of our users who want to discuss it further or want to talk about it further, feel free to give me a call, write me some email. I'm using it all the time on my home system and my work system. I've gone to it. I believe in it. I think it's the way to go. I think it's the right way to go. And I wouldn't be advocating that if I didn't believe in that, because if I'm wrong and it creates a huge support nightmare, that's going to fall right on my head. So I feel very confident in XP.
Good on you. Thank you very much.